This episode of the Deck Tees Podcast is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Become a part of their customer rewards program when you make any purchase and receive discounts on all future orders. That is CoolStuffInc.com. Episode 92 of the Deck Tees Podcast. I am your host, Aaron Campbell. My guest today is the man behind Cascade Games, who, along with Channel Fireball, will be hosting the sure-to-be-epic Grand Prix Portland in August. Here to tell us all about it is Tim Shields. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I am super good. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Thank you for wanting to come on.
Of course.
I have to admit, I was very surprised when Ricky reached out to me initially, Ricky Hayashi, our friend, and he asked me sort of randomly, he was like, do you do intros or do you do spots? And it's funny because I was actually thinking of re-recording my intro to do that, and this was a complete coincidence, and I was like, well, yeah, what'd you have in mind? And he goes, GP Portland. And the minute he said that, I was like, I'm in. What do I need to do? And then he asked me a very interesting question. He's like, what do you want for it? And I'm like, I don't know, and I'm a cheap date, so it's just like, give me a play map. So that's why we're here, because I love the idea of GP Portland. I think it's going to be an amazing time, and I hope I can help you turn it into a great event, Tim.
Well, I really appreciate that. And, you know, I think the event obviously hasn't happened yet, so I can't know how big it's going to be, but I really think Grand Prix Portland's going to be special. We're trying a bunch of new stuff to make it interesting in new ways, and I think we're pushing the boundaries of what is a GP a little bit, and I think that's going to be pretty awesome.
Oh, fantastic. Now, because this is my show, I do want to get to know you a little bit before we talk about the awesomeness of GP Portland, so hopefully you're okay with that.
Yeah. No, I just assume people care more about the event than they care about me, but I am super happy to talk to you about whatever.
Cool. So I want to go all the way back. So if I understand this correctly, before you got into this business, you ran a cyber cafe and a store in Portland. Is that right?
Yeah, although you might, if what you're trying to do is get a sense of what I've done in this industry, you might want to go back before that even.
All right, well, take me back before that then.
Okay, so I started out as a huge comic book fan. I still am. Love comics. And that turned into a business back when the comic market was much healthier. So I put myself through college buying and selling comic books. And then I opened a comic store with a little bit of games, but most it was very comic focused in Olympia, Washington when I was going to school. And a couple of the people who came to my shop to buy comics were playtesting and told me about this great new game that was coming out called Magic the Gathering. And I was like, okay, well, show me what you got. And so I started playing Magic. I couldn't get very much product, but I started playing Magic during Alpha. And what happened is I was only able to get a couple boxes from my distributor, and I put one out on the counter, and I took the other one for myself to play. And I got hooked on Magic, and I have been hooked ever since.
Wow. You said you paid for college just from comic books?
You know, I had some student loans, but that was my primary job, right? So what I would do is how there's a lot of comic book conventions, and I used to try and predict what comics were going to be popular, and I'd buy 200, 500 of an issue, and then go to conventions and resell those issues.
Wow. Have you tried applying that knowledge to like MTG Finance? Are you one of those speculators?
I am not. And,
no.
Part of it is, you know, they are so smart. There are so many people who are so smart, and they have time. They are sharp people, and they have time to devote to it. And I just don't. And so I just can't keep up. And fundamentally, like right now, my business is about trying to provide people a really awesome, you know, tournament or league or whatever experience, rather than, you know, cornering the market on a card or predicting what set's going to break down better or whatever. So, but I really admire what they do, and you know, super smart people.
I think it also takes a bit of a thick skin, because, you know, I feel kind of like they're almost like the doomsayers, where, you know, they'll pop out of the woodwork and they'll say, oh, this card's going to go up in price. You heard it here first. And there's the people who are like, oh, you're crazy. No, it's not doing anything. And you have to get used to people telling you that you're wrong and that you're crazy and that you don't know what you're talking about. And you just have to keep it all in until that moment comes when you could say that you were right and the price really did go up. And I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I could do something where people are constantly telling me I don't know what I'm talking about, I'm wrong, and that would kind of bother me.
Yeah. I struggle with that in what I do, right? Because the truth is, there's no such thing as a perfect event. We never execute perfectly, and so we're in totally unprecedented times with Magic. It is growing and changing so quickly, and so, you know, I just get ripped sometimes on forums or posts or whatever. And sometimes it's fair and sometimes it's not. But I probably need a little thicker skin than I have right now.
Wow. Yeah, that's something people are really, really hard on. And I mean, nerds can be sort of critical to begin with. You know, I think I was talking to a friend about that the other day, but, you know, I do feel like, you know, even when an event is run well, you know, there's always going to be that one person that wasn't happy, or they're going to find something. And, I've learned to be, I guess, forgiving, so maybe not the word, but I don't expect the world, if that makes any sense. Like, I have very basic expectations. My bar is pretty low. It would take a lot for me to say that an event was run poorly, and I just try really hard not to go there, because I know what a massive endeavor it is, and I don't think I could do it.
You know, I think the real challenge is that there's a tendency for us to judge other people based on the actual performance in the world, and to judge ourselves based on our aspirations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I certainly aspire to do an amazing job. And there are, you know, and some days we do, as a team, we do a great job. And other days, you know, there's a lot of things we could do better. And I certainly want to get better and better at this. But, you know, I got to hold myself with a, you know, I can't be too defensive about this. And it really is a learning process. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to be too cliched here, but we're getting better and better, and it's a crazy ride. You know, Magic events, a year from now, they could be doubled in size, and I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Mm-hmm. So I want to go back to you being hooked on Alpha.
Okay.
So from there, how long until you were at the Cyber Cafe?
Let's set the scene. I had a small comic and increasing game store in Olympia, Washington. It was blowing up school for me because I was doing things like keeping the store open all night so that we could just, you know, play Magic all night long. And although I was able to graduate, and I sold my store to some of my employees, and I moved back to my home, which is Portland. I ran a game store for roughly a year in Portland, and I was applying for college. And while I was doing that, I was also applying for jobs that seemed interesting. And one of those jobs, I applied for a position that theoretically was going to be just, you know, a short-term contract, couple weeks at Wizards of the Coast. And in the process of interviewing, the job got changed to a year-long contract, and so I went to work at Wizards of the Coast, and I worked there for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. I heard you worked for Wizards. I wasn't sure if that was true or not.
I promise it is a true fact, but it's so long ago, it's almost irrelevant. So I was there. I arrived just a couple days before Chronicles came out.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, and I, and so we were, we were trying to figure out what to do to create organized play. And at, you know, during, so Chronicles had come out, the market was really, really uneven, and there was a lot of very mixed reaction to that. And then, you know, Fallen Empires and Homelands, and we were, what I was doing is testing different play formats, so leagues, store-based leagues, things like that, in the context of Magic when, you know, when it had just, it had been going up like a rocket, and then, you know, and then people weren't particularly excited about either Fallen Empires or Homelands as sets. Mm-hmm. And what the main project I worked on, although I worked on lots of things, was first, do you remember Arena, the league for Magic?
I do. Okay.
Yeah. So I was the project manager for Arena. And so we tested it and designed it and then rolled it out. And that was a program that had a pretty good run. I'm pretty proud of that. And then because I had a retail background, I moved from the Arena project, to the Game Center project. And I was part of the team that helped design the Game Center and open that thing up. And that was crazy fun. Are you familiar with the Game Center at all?
No, but I do recall Arena. I think I was in high school, maybe like freshman year around this time. So I'm 30 now, so that was quite a while ago. Sure. So I don't remember that.
So the Game Center was I guess it was really the ultimate, it was the ultimate game story. It was, mm-hmm. it was huge. It included a tournament area for hundreds of people, a very large video game arcade, probably about 100 cabinet games, a BattleTech pod simulators, so you could have a really interesting experience, a retail store, a restaurant, and it was just lavishly themed. It was, if you ever take a chance to look at the pictures of what we did online, it was an amazing, amazing retail experience.
So you have the stint at Wizards,
yep.
and then you go back to the store.
Yeah, so while I was at Wizards, I was finishing, so my bachelor's is in psychology, and while I was at Wizards, I was also finishing up a master's degree, because I had assumed that gaming was going to be something that was a fun hobby for me, but not my profession. And so mm-hmm. I left Wizards and went to work at Providence Hospital, and as you know, so I was a counselor, but I was really missing gaming a lot. And so I decided, hey, you know what would be fun is let's see what happens if we take a couple different kinds of retail together, and let's combine a cyber cafe with a game store. And because it was right, our location was right next to a college campus, we did a lot of smoothies and drinks like that. And it was super, super fun. It was unfortunately probably not the most successful retail store. And we moved to a different location and business was stronger there. But I started it really as kind of a second project while I was, but my main thing at that point was working as a counselor.
Mm-hmm. So you're a TO with a background in psych.
Yes.
Interesting. Do you ever put that to use?
Constantly. No, it's, when I started running events for Wizards, independently, right? My first independent tournament, this was actually before there was really even a sanctioning system, was, you know, so it was during Legends, and, I think we probably got 100 people to do it, but I ran a couple of events outside of my store, and then lots of store-based events in Olympia. I go to Wizards. After Wizards, I didn't, I wasn't looking to be a tournament organizer, as my primary thing. But I had a store, we were running events almost every day, and the person who was the tournament organizer in Oregon stepped down. And so I was like, I think it would be fun, and it never occurred to me that it would grow the way it has.
Mm-hmm. How have you been able to use your psych background with what you do?
Well, okay, so the easiest, quickest thing is customer service, right?
Yeah.
Is trying to understand. But, you know, it really, an understanding of people informs everything I do, right? Because I am all about people. I'm all about relationships. And what I try very hard to do is figure out what it is that my staff, my judges, my employees, my players, you know, the vendors at the event, whichever group it is or individual I'm dealing with, I work really hard to figure out what their motivation is. And then I use that insight to try and figure out how to create a relationship that's going to work for both of us. And that's super helpful. Sometimes it's more, because when I was a counselor, what I was focused on, at the hospital, I was doing crisis counseling, and that occasionally at larger events comes in handy. There are occasionally events where, you know, where things have gone, you know, there are people who are having emergencies and in one of our recent Grand Prix, we had a gentleman who was having some medication problems with his psych medications, and I was able to get him connected with the resources he needed and get him stabilized. So, you know, hopefully that kind of thing doesn't happen too often.
Right. Well, I'm sure it also comes in handy with people who think they're having emergencies, you know, who they go to check in. And it's like, what do you mean you don't have a playmat? What do you mean you don't have my bias? And you're like, sir,
yeah.
I've got this.
Well, in truth, I hope this doesn't sound crass to say this, but and I mean I love what I do, and I care about magic and magic events very much. But fundamentally, the job I was in before, it was suicide counseling. It literally was life and death stuff. And you know, it turns out that what we do is a lot of fun, and there's a lot of value in the community. But it is not life and death, and that is tremendously important to keep in mind, because sometimes people get a little overly intense about it.
Oh yeah. So you're at the store, and you get the idea that you decide you want to start hosting events of your own.
Sure.
What were those first couple events like when you just got started?
So if we're back in Olympia. And I'm running my first tournaments. They were super fun to start out with, right? Mm-hmm. It was great, but you know the resources we have now. excuse me, the resources we have now just weren't there. There wasn't a judge program, so there just were no judges, right? There was no scorekeeping software. There was, so we did a lot of single elimination or double elimination events. We did a lot of, you know, things like picking the three people who had the strongest rules knowledge, and use a three panel judge system where you have to have two out of three judges agree, and the judges can't rule on their own in matches. But I mean, it was, it was super fun. But this is a time before, I mean, people weren't getting decks off the internet, right? It was, people were creating their own decks entirely on their own. No one really understood how Magic cards interact the way they do now. It was just a much, much less sophisticated time. But you know, in a lot of ways, it was less sophisticated. Certainly we weren't as organized as we are now, but, and I say we because it really is a team thing now. But there was probably more creativity in terms of the decks that I was playing and what other people were playing, and there was more of a sense of everybody was just in it for fun. Like the idea that people would play in tournaments for cash just hadn't occurred to anybody yet.
Mm-hmm. Do you miss those simpler times at all?
Sure, of course. I mean, you know what though? It's a lot like, you know, seeing a child grow up, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I'm a parent and I watch my kids grow up, and it is the growth in the Magic community, the sophistication, the level of thinking that goes on, the collective thinking that goes on, is absolutely amazing. And so I'm not sure, I don't want to be negative, but right, as a parent, you always think back about the time when you first held your child. And it was,
yeah,
it was amazing, but things need to grow and change. And we are, again, you know, I've mentioned it before, but I'm thinking and having to deal with the change in Magic a lot right now, because it is just exploding, and it is probably impacting tournament organizers as much or more than anyone else.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I want to talk about is that you've worn a lot of hats in your time being a gamer. You know, you were the store owner, you worked in crisis counseling, you worked for publishers. Do you think that getting all that perspective helps you as a TO or gives you a unique advantage?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because fundamentally, right, I mean, especially when people are starting out organizing events, okay, the natural thing is to think about the event from your point of view, to think about it from the player's point of view. Those are the two natural ways to think about an event. But you really have to, I mean, I, because of my background and my just how I am as a person, I work really hard to understand these events from everybody's point of view. And there's groups or constituents that we really do have to make happy. They have to work. A good event has to work for everybody. And if all the players are happy, but the publisher is not happy, you don't have a successful event. If the publisher and the players are happy, but all of the retailers who came to the event are unhappy, you know, you still don't have a successful event. And my job is to try and balance the interests of the publisher, the artists, the retailers, the players, the judges, the staff, and try and do the best I can to make everybody to help everybody reach their goals. And it is it's difficult at times, but it's also super fun and super rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so if I've done events for lots of other game companies, and I'm able to understand what those companies in general, what they want, pretty quickly, and that's a huge advantage.
Mm-hmm. One of the events that Cascade Games is known for that I would certainly consider a success is Grand Prix Vegas. GP Vegas was epic, to say the least.
Yep.
There wasn't anything like it before that, and with the exception of Richmond, I don't think there's really been anything like it since then. What was it like in those weeks or those months beforehand when you're watching it get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger? Walk me through that.
Okay, so first let's start out with, when people look at the event now, it's tempting to say, of course that was always going to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was always going to be huge. But that was not a foregone conclusion at all. So
right.
when the folks from Wizards came to me and we had a face-to-face chat about Grand Prix Vegas, because they asked me to book a room, and I booked a room based on a format that said the word special. But I had no information about it until we could have a meeting. So I sat down with them to have a meeting, and they told me that it was going to be this set called Modern Masters. But I had no information at all about that set, right? I didn't know if Modern Masters was going to be the equivalent of Cold Snap or not. And so I went home, I talked with my wife, and we had a decision we had to make, which is, were we going to try and at least create the possibility of going big, or were we going to be conservative? And I thought Modern Masters sounded intriguing. I was hoping it wasn't going to be another Cold Snap. And so I went out and I took the room that I had rented and I doubled the space. So we got a very, very large space. But our plan all along was, if we didn't have substantial turnout, just to keep the air wall closed and just not let anybody know that we had another 50,000 square feet. But mm-hmm. it was extraordinarily difficult to try and plan and understand how big it could be. I had a lot of meetings with judges where we went over the logistics. But the assumption we all had for the logistics was, you know, was, so our planning number was 2,000 players. Okay. So it was nowhere near what it came to be. And even that sounded like a stretch to a lot of us. And our assumption further was that people would play in the main event and then it being Vegas, they would go off and, you know, so they'd play in the main event, but our assumption was Sunday was going to be very slow because people would be off doing all of the things you can do in Vegas. And that was, you know, that turned out not to be correct. It was nowhere close to correct. And I think overall, as I evaluate that event, I think we did a pretty fabulous job with the main event. There were some mistakes made, but, you know, but the main event, I think, was very solid. The side events, I think, were much rougher. And fundamentally, it was because we were just bombarded by people. Because people didn't leave. They arrived early and they just kept playing and playing and playing. And it was awesome, but it was not what we expected or what we had prepared for.
Mm-hmm. I had Helen Bergio on my show a couple of weeks ago, and she was talking about the process behind it and how, you know, you're watching it get bigger and bigger. And I think she had even mentioned that there was talk of capping it before what it capped out at. And I think she said something along the lines of, we're going to let the players decide how big this gap is.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's going to be, I can just try to imagine what it's like where you're watching 3,000, 3,500, you know, were you one of the people who wanted to cap it sooner or were you fine with the, let's go all the way?
Oh no, I, okay. So again, when even on Saturday, I thought we were going to have a big day Saturday and have a slow day Sunday. And I knew we were ready, you know, ready as you can get. Right. I knew we were as ready as you can get for that main event. We had excellent head judges. We had divided the tournament into quadrants. We had everyone, you know, we were going to have since it was before, we didn't have all the names into the database yet, but we were getting them in quickly. We were ready. I knew we were going to be ready for the main, and the main was, I was relatively comfortable that things were going to go well. So I was ready to let it keep going. But in the last couple days, attendance was growing at a rate that was, it was doubling, and it was doubling off a pretty large base. And if we didn't cap it, we could have been in a situation where players came and we just didn't have anywhere for them to sit.
Yeah.
And I'm still kind of embarrassed. I wrote a post where I said, you know, on my blog where I said, hey, you know, sure we might have to cap it. People don't say it, but there's a limit in size to every event, right? The building only has so much space, right, for every event. But realistically, with Magic, we haven't had to cap events very often at all. And up till then, you know, other than events at conventions, I don't know of any event that real, you know, any event of size that had been capped. And so I wrote a post saying, you know, sure, maybe we'll have to cap it, but, you know, I made a smart aleck reference to, and maybe Galactus will come and eat the world, but I don't think it's going to happen. Well, it turned out I was really wrong about that. We did, you know, we did have to cap. And if I had known we were going to do that, I would have done a couple other things differently.
Mm-hmm. What did you take away from that experience? Like, what are some of those things you would have done differently?
Okay, so boy, there's a lot. let's start out with, I will never, ever, ever, as long as it's under my power, again, require people to check in order to play. Now, in truth, you didn't have to check in to do anything except get your playmat. We would have taken care of everything else. But I thought having more than 1,000 playmats would mean that, you know, like a normal GP, there's 200 or 300 people outside the doors waiting because they really want a playmat. Then everybody trickles in and we pass out a playmat as they arrive and it's super easy. I didn't think that we'd have well over 1,000 people in line on Friday afternoon. And, and because you know the Magic product didn't arrive on time, right?
I heard some horror stories about it. I know Ricky had wanted me to bring it up. Ricky was like, ask him about the product. And I was like, ask him what about the product? So what about the product?
Okay. So actually, let's start over with things, the most important lesson. Okay.
Okay.
I should have, you know, most convention centers don't let you ship things far in advance. Mm-hmm. I should have rented any other room, doesn't matter which one, in the convention center, hired a couple armed guards, and just had the product shipped in a week in advance. That is, but you know, with GPs, Wizards is very good at shipping. You don't think there's going to be a problem. Well, I kept calling, you know, it, so it was Thursday, nothing had arrived, and I kept calling, and finally, you know, the tracking information said a truck's on the way, and I'm like, okay, that's great. The truck comes, and I forget, it was roughly a pallet and a half arrived. Clearly not enough for a Grand Prix, but that was just the land, right? So
Oh, wow. Yeah,
I mean, the scale of this was crazy, right? So a pallet and a half of land arrived, and I go online and the tracking says, you know, product delivered. And so I hop on the phone. I hop on the phone with folks at Wizards, and I'm talking to somebody in the shipping department, and they're telling me, well, it shows that everything's delivered. I'm like, nope, we've got a pallet and a half, but it's land. And they're like, are you sure? And because the site was having trouble getting us the right number of tables and chairs, I'm like, I got to go take care of that. And I put one of my judges on the line to explain what the difference between a case of land and a case of modern magic is and how we could tell the difference. So
yeah,
we alerted them. And so it was probably, they started to look into it, and it was Thursday afternoon when it was discovered that that due to some kind of clerical error, and I have never actually looked into it, because I really don't want to know what happened. I made sure that it wasn't my mistake, and then I'm like, okay, you know, I don't want to point fingers at people, but there was some kind of clerical mistake, and the product was still sitting in a warehouse. And my answer was, fine, just tell me where it is. I'll fly there. One of my staff drives a forklift. We'll load it, and we'll just drive 24/7, and we'll get the stuff where we need to go. But the problem is, it was in, gosh, now let me remember, it was in, I think it was in Little Rock. It was somewhere in Arkansas, okay? So, and I plugged that into Google Maps, and there was no way that I could get the product to the, like, you physically cannot drive the product to Las Vegas in time for the event. And so I was totally freaked out at that point.
Yeah.
And so I called back with Wizards of the Coast. Actually, I got a couple of my key judges to huddle up, and I'm like, okay, so here's the deal, guys. We've promised, you know, thousands of people who have pre-registered, we've got to give them a tournament, right? I mean, that would be horrible. Give me a scenario. Give me an answer on how we can do this. And it wasn't even clear. Like, I mean, so what they came back to me with was two options. One was, it might be possible to go to many distributors, and they might have enough product that not Modern Masters, but they might have enough of core set or whatever that we can still hold the main event, and then we mail people their Modern Masters. Okay. Mm-hmm. That was an awful answer, but that might have worked.
Yeah.
The other answer that we came up with is, if we couldn't get enough just magic of any one particular set, which is entirely possible because of the time limits and the amount that people keep on hand, we came up with a plan on how to do the world's largest proxy tournament. Mm-hmm. And it would have gone something like this. We would have used the Wizards algorithm to create a deck list for people. And they'd sit down in their chairs, and we'd be like, hi, everybody. I'm Tim Shields. Thanks for coming to the tournament. We've got a little change for you. There's a shipping envelope. Please fill that out with your name and address. We will be sending you your Modern Masters product. Please fill that legibly so that we can ship that to you. That will be going out sometime next week. For today, we'll be proxying Modern Masters. Please take the Sharpie out. There's 60 cards and a deck list. Fill out the name of each card on legibly onto a land card. You have, say, 90 minutes for creating your deck. Begin now. And I didn't know if I did that whether or not I would live through the day, but that was those were my backup plans.
Wow.
What did happen, and you know, I gotta say this, okay? Sometimes people, you know, sometimes players, you know, from their perspective, they're upset with Wizards of the Coast, and I hear them say things like, Wizards doesn't care about tournaments, or Wizards doesn't care about players. Well, because I know these people, I have always known that's fundamentally not true. Wizards of the Coast as a group and individually, they care about players a lot. But my proof for it is what they did to make Grand Prix Vegas work. So it's already after business hours on a Thursday. Mm-hmm. It's still business hours in Las Vegas, but it's after 5 in Arkansas by the time they figured out where the product is.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow they were able to charter a jet. And then what they did is they chartered a jet. They loaded, I think it was probably, you know, I could probably check, but it's roughly 9 pallets. So they chartered a jet and they flew 9 pallets from Arkansas, but they can't, apparently the Las Vegas airport, it doesn't have cargo facilities, so they couldn't fly it into Las Vegas. The closest airport they could unload at was LAX. So they flew from Arkansas, they flew the product from Arkansas to LAX, and they had a truck and forklift stationed on the tarmac. They moved it straight from the plane onto a truck, and then a truck driver drove all night.
Wow.
From Los Angeles, drove to, you know, of course the flight was late, so it was all delayed, but the truck driver drove, all night, and so Friday, we did not in fact do registration perfectly in terms of check-in. And part of that was because what I was paying attention to was trying to manage the line and figure out where the truck was. And we were scheduled for what started out, we broke the record for largest Magic event in history, actually, with the mini master tournament we did on Friday. I've got a line literally around the convention center, and at 11:15 or so, the truck arrived with the product to do the noon tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, as the truck's coming in, and I'm trying to get the truck past the line of people without running anyone over, anybody getting hurt, I realize the truck doesn't have a lift gate.
Oof.
And so we've got to get all of these pallets of Modern Masters off the truck. And there's no one at the facility who has a forklift. Or I'm sorry, who has the keys to the forklift. Luckily, ultimately we were able to find a different key. Operate because there's no loading dock there, right? So we got the forklift running, and we got the product into the hall, and we were able to fire the mini master tournament just in time. And I don't think the players on site knew how close we came to having to delay that. If the truck had been another 45 minutes later than it was, we would have had to delay the mini master. And of course, if Wizards had not been amazing about renting chartering a jet, then we would not have had the product. We couldn't have even had it by Saturday.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yeah, it was so I would just ask for people to be, I know that many things worked well. The main event was great. There were logistical snags. There were problems, right? There were things that we've learned. But if you keep this in context of some of the things that we were dealing with, I think overall we did very well.
Yeah.
I had stationed a crew. We had like 50 people on Thursday to bag all the product, you know, put a deck list and a pen and six packs and a bag, right? So that mm-hmm. we can make deck registration go well. Well, all of those people sat all day on Thursday waiting for the product to arrive, and of course it never arrived. And so on Friday, when we were trying to process this huge line and take care of the Mini Master, we had to pull 50 staff people off the floor to start bagging and getting that product ready for Saturday. And so we were a little understaffed. And we were recruiting everybody we could, and people were great pitching in, and we had lots and lots of judges who came to play who helped us get product ready, and it was great, but it was a substantial effort in the last minute.
Mm-hmm. So I want to move on and talk about your next big thing.
Oh, sure.
GP Portland. So this is shaping up to be quite an experience. Tell me how long you've been planning this for.
Boy, it's been about a year. We've been working on it.
A year?
Yeah. So there's, wow. I mean, obviously it's not a full-time effort at first, but we're trying to do several things that either haven't been done before or haven't been done on this level before. And so I'm super excited, and it requires a lot more planning work and exploration than you would with a Grand Prix typically.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said a couple times so far that, you know, GP Portland is going to be having a lot of unique features to it. And, you know, because you've been in the business for so long, you know, you could go the safe route and just do what has worked for other GPs or what other organizers are doing. You know, what is it that makes you sort of want to go the more unique route and try these new things? You know, sort of if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
I guess it starts with a sense of where Grand Prix can be. Mm-hmm. I think so. Vegas really changed my thinking, right? I mean, my first Grand Prix had almost 400 people, and I thought that was a big tournament. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, after Vegas, I don't see any reason why we can't do what you know the pop culture, comic culture conventions have done, and grow exponentially. I don't see why we can't have 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 person Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a little while to get there. But if I had to bet, I would bet we're going to end up with very large Grand Prix. And in order to do that, right? So events, I don't know if we'll ever hit anything on the scale of the San Diego Comic-Con, but I think we could get very large. And if we're going to do that, we have to redefine what some parts of Grand Prix are for. Okay. Mm-hmm. And fundamentally, there's got to be a lot of fun stuff to do, and we have to find ways to customize events so that they meet what the players need and the players want. Because as these things get bigger and bigger, we're going to get different types of players to come who want different things. And so one of the things we're trying that I'm super excited about for Portland is it's going to, I hope, address what I think of as a problem, which is how often does the prize for a side event actually match what the player who wants to play really wants in terms of prizes, right? How often does, maybe you want to play standard, but for some reason you want to win a Mox. Or you want to play standard, but you want, you know, somebody else wants store credit, or somebody else wants boxes. And it's, we fundamentally, as tournament organizers, we try really hard to guess what people are going to like, but we can never know for sure. And in truth, it's likely that every person in the event has a different thing that would be their favorite prize. So how do we fix this? And I was actually running a Kaijudo event for Magic, which is, you know, which was super fun. And they have this concept of a prize wall. It actually reminds me of something from Chuck E. Cheese, right? Where you play a bunch of video games, it gives you tickets, and then you take your tickets, because my son's seven, he takes his tickets over, He redeems his tickets and he chooses what he wants.
Yeah.
So why don't we do something like that? I mean, we're going to try it as an experiment. We'll figure out if people like it or not. Because I don't want to force anybody into my experiment. So every side event will still have, you know, the normal prize it had before. Mm-hmm. Or you can opt into taking essentially tickets. We're going to call them points, right? So you take points if you want, and then you can take your points, you take your points over to a redemption area, and we're going to have hundreds of different options for you to choose from in terms of prizes. And if you want to save up your tickets from event to event so that you get enough points where you can walk away with a Mox or a Lotus, that's fine. If you just want booster packs, that's fine. If you want, I'm working really hard to find packs, you know, older packs, and mm-hmm. I don't know if I'll succeed, but my goal is to have packs as far back as beta, but we'll wow. see. I have not found them yet, but I'm working on it. And I want to have, my hope is that people like this, and you know, the dream is that every GP I'll get a little bit better at finding more things for prizes, but eventually I would like to have a situation where you can choose from any set that Magic's ever done in terms of packs. You could get from the vaults, you can get Moxes, you can get whatever, you can get play mats, you can get sleeves, whatever it is you want, I want to have that on the prize wall.
Wow, that sounds incredible.
Doesn't that sound like fun?
I mean, it does.
And you know, because when I say I think Grand Prix are going to scale up, I really think they will. I don't know if the main event can scale infinitely, right? I mean, I think we're going to start. We broke through kind of a psychological barrier, and by we, in this case, I mean the team of judges who figured out how to do it for Vegas. But I think we're fine up till 10 or maybe 15,000, somewhere in that range, for a main event. But at some point, the main event gets too large and it's not workable. But what we, I think, mistakenly call side events now, you know, those could be, I mean, we're already running a couple hundred tournaments over the weekend. There's no reason those can't scale up to get much, much more numerous. And we could do thousands of tournaments over a weekend if we had demand.
Mm-hmm. But
But the key is to make sure that we have the right prize for the right people.
Well, I was just going to say, it sounds like you're seeing that with the Super Sunday series, where it started off being sort of the last hurrah for the people who maybe didn't do well in day one. They'd be like, okay, I'll do the Super Sunday series. And now it's become like almost as hot of a ticket as the main event, where it is a 9-round event now, yep. And it is an all-day thing. And I believe you. I believe you when you say that. And I know people who are going to the GPs for the side events, absolutely. Where they're like, that's not really my thing, but I'm going to do a little of drafting today. I'm going to do a little modern today. I'm going to do a little of this. And, yeah, you're right.
And so a couple other things in the same kind of line, right? I will think that there are people who want to come and they only want to play in sides. And what I want to do is find a way to make that economical for them. And so sealed's a problem, right? Because there's a cost to for the packs, and I haven't quite figured this out yet. And so, but what we're trying is something that we're calling an infinite constructed bracelet, where you pay one entry fee, much like, you know, it's much like a nightclub bracelet, where you get a bracelet, and as long as you have your bracelet, you can enter any of the scheduled constructed events.
It reminds me of being at a carnival. Like, I know we have a lot of carnivals here where you get that $15 bracelet and you can ride all the rides.
All the rides you want, absolutely. I hope nobody's like, Tim Shields is trivializing Magic tournaments by taking ideas from carnivals. But you know what? Fundamentally, I don't think this is for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. Clearly it's not. But there are some people out there who want to play a lot of Magic, and frankly, they want to grind a lot of, they, once they figure it out, I'm not sure if they know about it yet, but they are going to want to grind a lot of points to use on that, to use on that prize wall. And so if that fits what you want, it is a great deal for you. If you're going to go play in the, if you're coming mostly to play in the main and you're going to make day two, then it's probably not affordable. But if you just want to come play all weekend, it's a great deal.
It's also great because they're changing the buy program a little bit and how the buys are handed out. And I think they were going to make the close off like August, I think, or maybe even before that, but they've extended it to, I think, November, where they're going to start counting your annual Planeswalker points starting in November. So like you said, if you're trying to grind Planeswalker points and you've got that bracelet, you might be able to get that first buy or that second buy that you normally couldn't before.
And in that line, right? Now, I didn't know about that change. I didn't know that was coming down. But another thing I wanted to do with Portland is see how much interest is there in starting early. Okay, and so we're starting this Grand Prix on Thursday instead of starting it on Friday. And so if you buy that constructed bracelet, you could start playing, you know, as much as you want, and grinding out points if that's what you want, for, as you said, both for the Planeswalker points and the prize wall, and you could start that on Thursday if you want.
Wow. And this is the first GP to ever be 4 days long.
That's right.
It's a little intimidated by that at all?
No. You know what I'm a little intimidated by is that the main event, I right now, I don't know if the main event's going to be 1,500 or if it's going to be 3,000. Mm-hmm. And the uncertainty around that, that's what I'm intimidated by. And that's one of the things we're going to get much better on at, I hope. And by we, in this case, I mean all the tournament organizers, right? We need to get way better at predicting attendances. But, you know, in Portland, the format's never been done in the Pacific Northwest. At least it hasn't been done any time in the recent history. And it's the week after a pro tour. So there's going to be a bunch of pros who stay, and I'm sure that's going to be an attractive thing to get to play against pros for some people. I really don't know what our attendance number is going to be. I know it's going to be big, but if you really made me say how big, I just don't know right now.
Do you think that you'd be able to have a 4-day GP if it wasn't team sealed? Like if it was just a standard GP or a modern GP, could you still pull that off?
It depends on the city. So I guess the quick answer is sure, but there's a, you know, without getting too far into the business side of it, which is probably not a lot of interest to your business, but the ballrooms we use for Grand Prix are really, really expensive to rent. And sure. So you know, if it's a smaller city, some small cities, the ballrooms are, you know, space is inexpensive. And some, they're smaller population, but high cost. San Diego would be an example of a, you know, relatively high cost city, smaller population. It's it's difficult to do it under those considerations. But, you know, we'll see how this goes as an experiment, and it's possible that it's possible it could work. And you know, the other thing is that I haven't actually talked about my partnership in terms of running events with John Sasso and Channel Fireball. And the reality is, the main reason for me why I did that is because John and I share a very similar understanding of what the goals are and how to make events work. And what we've tried to do as much as possible is sync up the what we do, number of rounds for side events, how side events work, who the artists we're going to have, the fact that they're pros, like at the event. We try to sync up lots and lots of factors so that you know that the Grand Prix on the West Coast are all going to be run in roughly the same way. And so if John and I do these things together, assume if it works for Portland, right? If that works for Portland, then, you know, maybe in 2015 we can try and do it more. And hopefully what we'll develop is a West Coast style of Grand Prix. But, you know, we'll have to see after this experiment happens.
You also mentioned something interesting I want to talk about. You mentioned artists. You, as of this recording, you have 13 different artists booked.
Well, you know, the set, we're using M15. And so my goal was, hey, let's see if we can build an artist alley of 15 artists. And I think we're there. At this point, my holdup with that is, you know, I'm waiting to get the floor plan back from the fire marshal. I assume we're going to be able to squeeze in a couple more artists, but, you know, but I can't promise yet, but I've got my fingers crossed.
I have to say, I've really enjoyed seeing tournament organizers reach out to the artists and really showcase them and really, you know, give them an opportunity to, you know, make something more off of what they do. How important is it for you to have that artist presence at the GPs? Like, what do you think it does for the event?
Well, okay, so I got to say, it's really, there's two reasons, right? And one thing is, and I just have to tell the truth about this, I'm a big, big geek. I love, and I'm a geek for magic art, and I love, part of why I do it is just, it's part of what makes the event fun for me. I love meeting the artists. I love being their host. I love having them there. And it's just, it's super fun for me. Now, when we say, what does it really do for the event, right? It really depends on what players we're talking about. And because there are some players who are there to win the Grand Prix, and that's all they're going to do, and they just couldn't care less, right? They don't care if I have an artist alley or not. What they want is to win the GP. But for them, sweet. We've got judges. We've got a main event. It's going to be well run. That's fine. If I'm going to grow these events, though, I need to bring in as many kind of attractions as I can for as many, you know, we want to keep it focused on magic, but what kinds of attractions can I build in? And I know that there's a ton of people who just love the artists. I mean, I have people who come and tell me, hey, I came to the Grand Prix and I had a super fun time with the artist alley. I'm like, that's great. What did you play? And sometimes the answer is they didn't play at all. They just came and met artists and got cards signed and bought prints. And, you know, and that to me is a totally legitimate thing because we've got to make these things win for everybody. And if what your thing is magic art, then you should come and hang out with the artists and meet them. If you like side events, let's do that. And hopefully it works for everybody.
Another unique feature of GP Portland is you're hosting a blood drive with the Red Cross. I got to be honest, I don't really like giving blood. I have to do it enough as it is.
Sure.
Have you given any thought to maybe some sort of incentive for those players that are like, I really want to give blood, but I don't really like to. What's in it for me?
Sure, sure. Okay, so two different things about that. So okay. I guess I am super proud that we're starting to figure out ways to give back to the larger community, right? And that, I think that as these events get bigger, there's going to be more and more opportunity to do that. So we're having a blood drive, and for the last year and a half, 2 years, every GP that either Channel Fireball or I have run, or we run collectively, has had a charity event and I love those things. But as far as incentives, My plan is to see if we can't sweeten it and find some cool giveaways. I'm going to go to the vendors. I'm going to talk with, I want to work on that, but there's so many other logistics. And so I haven't quite gotten to that yet, but I hope to do that. You know, for instance, the guys who do sign in blood,
I was just thinking that.
The play mats and life counters and little books. Yeah, it seems like a no-brainer that they should be excited about donating something. Right? But we'll have to see how that turns out. I know that no matter what, if we give nothing away, if we give something away, I know that there's a bunch of people who would like to help support the Red Cross. And they have, you know, it's an important program, and so and frankly, it's super easy for us to do, right? We just set up a table, we advertise it, and hopefully it really helps out the Red Cross.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Saw movies. I know every time a new Saw movie would come out, they would have blood drives. And I thought it was a nice way to give back, and they would have little taglines. And I think it wouldn't be too much of a reach if you did it here, where you give blood, you get blood. Blood being sign of blood stuff. And I think that'd be awesome. I would love to see that.
We'll see something. I don't want to promise those guys to deliver something without talking to them first. But something like that would be nice. And then the other we do a charity tournament on Sunday where usually, our the folks we donate to is Child's Play. And I chose that because they're focused on kids in hospitals, and that's an issue that's pretty dear to me. But you may have heard that, the daughter of one of Wizards' employees was in a car accident. And there's a drive to help support that. And so we're going to help out with the funds from the charity event. And just so you know, it's not one of these matters where it's like the profits from the event. It's every dime that comes into the charity event goes straight to charity.
Wow. That's fantastic. I know Gathering Magic. I'd heard about that a couple weeks ago, right when it happened. I was at an IQ when that happened, and not only did I donate as well, but Gathering Magic agreed to. I get paid store credit to do the show. I don't get like any hard cash or anything, and I'm fine with that. But I had asked Gathering Magic if there was any way that we could sort of, you know, just this once, if I could take all the credit I've amassed for the month of June and turn it into cash and donate it to Mariah's fund. Yeah. And Gathering Magic and Cool Stuff Inc. both agreed to that. So in addition to my own little donation that I made, I will be donating all of my store credit for the month of June to Mariah's fund as well.
That's awesome. And you know,
yeah.
And as a community, right, I think it's super important for us as Magic players to support the people in our own community. And so this is a great chance. And I've been really impressed with just how everybody has stepped up. Great.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about how much power we have as a community, where it's like, you know, their goal, I think, was $75,000, and they're past the halfway point. And you really look at just the names and the faces and the numbers, the sheer number of people who've retweeted this and given something to it, and you just think about that, and you're like, wow, we did that. Like, holy crap. And it's pretty powerful stuff.
It is, absolutely.
So the other feature I want to talk about, I know you said you didn't have too much information on. I know I had Christine Sprankle on my show last week, and she had mentioned that you were really trying to get some cosplay, maybe some cosplay competitions. My friend Tifa Robles is hoping to maybe submit a panel for you. This is a thing, too, cosplay and panel.
Absolutely. Well, you know, part of my vision for this, for what Grand Prix evolved to, is more and more events of every type, right? I want to have, fundamentally, I want to have something for, it's got to stay Magic focused, but I want to have something for everybody to do. And regardless, you know, regardless of whether or not you want to play in the main event, you want to play in the sides, my goal is for everybody to come to a Grand Prix. And so, I think about the things that make me go to conventions. And I like panels. I like contests. I think cosplay's super fun. And so I want to do whatever we can to encourage that. Mm-hmm.
It also sounds like you're trying to, instead of having, you know, GPs like Vegas and Richmond be these once every couple of months big bursts of GP, it sounds like you're almost trying to make that the norm, where, you know, it's not so rare and that is something that's happening all the time. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think the comic book world can teach us something, right? You look at comic book conventions, and they have just gotten so huge, and there's a comic book convention, you know, I'm going to make up these numbers because I don't know the truth of it, but let's say that you could go to a comic book convention that's more than 25,000 people virtually, if you're able to travel virtually every weekend, certainly through the summer, but you might actually be able to do it all year round. Mm-hmm. GPs have a similar schedule, but we haven't grown, like, you know, GPs have grown from a few hundred people to, you know, to low thousands, right? But if we're going to grow to have 10 and 20,000 person events, we need to have all kinds of things for everybody to do. And so, so if we can make events on the West Coast, full of crazy fun stuff, then, you know, then hopefully, you know, hopefully the players will like it. Hopefully all the stakeholders will like it. You know, and ultimately there's no reason why, you know, if PAX can have Nerdcore rap, why don't we have concerts? So if something is at a convention, I don't know why we can't do it at a Grand Prix.
Sure. So before we go, give me one last sales pitch for anybody who's listening who's like, maybe I want to go to Portland. I don't think I can make it to Portland. Sell my listeners on why they should go to Portland.
Okay. So, So that's no pressure there. But So let's start with, I know people like playmats a lot. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you quite yet what the playmat is. But what if it was me, I would come to the practice events on Thursday and Friday. They're team events. They have a super low entry fee. They're only $20 per player. So you could start out in practice, and every time you enter, you get a playmat. And I'm not going to pretend to be objective here, right? I'm clearly not. But I really do think that this is the best-looking Grand Prix playmat ever.
Now, Tim, I don't know if you know this, but my show is known for being like the Barbara Walters show, where people come here and they spill their guts.
Sure.
So can you give me any tiniest little detail?
Okay. Here's what I could – what can I say? I can say that this it will feature a kind of the art from a card, and that type of card has never been on a playmat before.
I'll take it.
That's as good as I can do. So,
that's fine.
So, and frankly, I think a bunch of people will come play on Thursday and Friday and then sell their playmats to the vendors. And it's so gorgeous. I would not be surprised if you can sell it for more than what it costs to enter the tournaments on Thursday and Friday.
Oh, wow.
Chris Ron's art is amazing. And this card, I mean, I looked at it and I couldn't believe we were getting it. It is so good. So let's start with that.
Okay.
Then Team Sealed, excuse me, pardon my cold, but Team Sealed is just awesome. It's super fun. So if you like competitive magic, playing Team Sealed is great. So you've got a couple days to practice. You're getting unique prizes that you choose while you're doing that. You're getting points and you're getting playmats as you sign up. As you said before, you're getting a great deal. You know, your Planeswalker points are going up super fast. Mm-hmm. The main event's going to be incredibly fun. And then, you know, there's going to be all kinds of activities going on. Portland's a great city. The weather here is rainy and miserable all year round, except for the end of the summer when it is absolutely gorgeous. Portland's one of the most beautiful cities in the country during that little window at the end of the summer. It's fun. We have great beer. We have food carts everywhere. It has awesome mass transit. I mean, Portland's, you can get where you want to go. You don't have to get a car. It's fun. The food's great. Portland's a great place to go. So come play Magic, stay a couple days, check out Portland. It's going to be super fun.
Awesome. And like I said, I wish I could go. Like I said, I think it's going to be an awesome time. Even if I can't be there, hopefully I can at least help make it awesome with this show.
I really appreciate it. And it's been great getting a chance to talk and get to meet each other.
Now, the last thing I have to ask you, Tim, is it's obvious that Cascade Games is a big deal on the West Coast, and you're doing really big things on your side of the country. Have you given any thoughts to maybe expanding your reach a little bit, helping maybe us Midwestern folks out, maybe some Southern folks? I mean, we could maybe use your help.
You know, okay, so first of all, I got to say, Grand Prix overall are getting better and better. Just all of the organizers, we're collectively, individually, we're all getting better at this, okay? So, and I don't have, you know, I have to cooperate. I want to cooperate. I like the other tournament organizers. And so the problem is if I was to say, hey, I want to do an event in a particular city, what that ends up doing is taking an event away from somebody else. So what I'm much more interested in is, you know, John Sasso from Channel Fireball and I have come together and said, hey, let's figure out a house style. Let's figure out how we can work together to give a consistent experience so players can come knowing what they're going to get, right? So they know what the Grand Prix experience is going to be. And let's team up together. I would love to team up with other tournament organizers and help standardize the experience. The other thing is we need to learn as organizers. We need to learn. We need to get better. And just doing this, and I know it's kind of crazy to say, just doing a couple Grand Prix a year, it's not enough. You go through the learning curve, right? But what happens is the events are so crazy and it's so many hours and you try and jot notes down, but you forget that, hey, I was going to fix this. And so it's really easy to make little mistakes from event to event. The more organizers we can get to jump in and cooperate and we can work to standardize the experience means we can go through this learning curve and have more. We can go through the learning curve faster. We can improve everybody's events. So I don't want to try and take an event away from someone else. But if I can find a way to cooperate with more people, I would love that.
Well, I would love that too. So, Tim, if anybody's enjoyed your appearance on the show and they want to know more about you and the Grand Prix, where can they find you? How can they get a hold of you?
Well, let's see. The email address of questions at Cascade Games, if you have any questions, we can certainly help out there. If you want on Facebook, there's a Facebook event for this Grand Prix, and there's already a bunch of activity and people trying to find teammates there, which I think is pretty neat. I have a website, although it's kind of horrible from the dark ages. It needs to be updated, but it's cascadegames.com, and soon it will get a new face. But right now it's a good place to get information, but it's not interactive enough. But that's so, and you know, and I tweet just under, not under Cascade Games, just under my name of Timothy P. Shields. And so I tweet out a little bit, but not. Those are email.
Oh, you're breaking up a little bit there.
Okay, sorry. You can reach me through either Facebook or Twitter or my email, any of those. Or, you know, you can always just come to an event that I run and talk with me, because I really do want people's input on what do you like that we do? What can we do better? I'm super focused on how do we improve and make these things more fun for everybody.
Absolutely. So, well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Tim. I'm really glad that I got the opportunity to get to know you, and I'm really glad that I get to plug the event with my recorded spots over the month of July.
Thank you.
And thank you for choosing me to sort of partner up with.
Oh, absolutely. No, I am really happy, and I'm happy to talk, and I'm delighted to get to meet you. And as we said before, I'd love to get to meet you in the physical world some point, but you know, it'll have to be a different event, it sounds like.
I'm planning on it, especially after hearing you and the passion you have for your events. I can't wait.
Well, I love this, and frankly, it's a treat for me to be able to, I mean, I started out running events, and you know, when we were designing different organized play experiences, I thought Grand Prix were a neat idea, but I thought they were going to be 200, maybe 300 person events. I didn't understand the potential for Magic, and it's amazing to see this grow and to see, you know, some of the people who played in my shop, you know, when during beta or Unlimited or Arabian Nights or whatever. I see some of those people at events and, you know, and now they're adults and they have kids, and then some of them are starting to bring their kids to events. And it's amazing. I love this.
Yeah. And if anyone has enjoyed what they've heard here on the Deck Tees, you can always find the show first and foremost on GatheringMagic.com. The show is on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave me some stars. You can keep up with the show on Twitter at the Deck Tees. You can keep up with me at Original Estrus. And you can also email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay?
Hey, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
And that's it.
Yay!